want you to be able to hear what's happening with the Shawi. And I really want to thank Jeremy and the missions team for allowing us to have this Sunday to bring Joe and Kirsty and Brad here. Joe is a missionary with Missionary Ventures and has been in Peru for the last 3 years. And we have worked very closely with him for the last 2 years. And he's really about doing the agricultural sustainability projects with the Shawi. And when we talk about the farm and what's happening at the farm with the cacao and all of that, that's Joe's ministry, and he's going to talk to you more about that. But just because we need to be thinking about the Peru team early, I'm actually going to read this so I don't get sidetracked, because I want Joe to have as much time as possible. Just that it's hard to believe that we're already thinking about 2015, and by the time, but time's getting away, and I do want to have the team pretty much in place by December, and because January the work begins. This year we're looking at a slightly different approach, and although it will include a medical team, we are looking to expand beyond the medical team in 2015. It's our 10th anniversary of working with the Shawi. It'll be our 10th trip to Peru, so that's kind of staggering in itself for all of us that have been part of that ministry. So Brad Wilson and myself had a discussion in September about what we might do differently this year that would engage the whole village, as well as the children in those villages we're visiting. And we've come up with a slightly different plan for next year. One, we are still going to hold a clinic, as this is a very, very important part of our ministry. We do reach a lot of Shawi who have no medical access. We do find some very unusual things in the jungle, and we refer them out. Part of the money that we take down there pays to ensure that they receive the medical care that they acquire, that they require, even if it means going to Lima for chemo or anything that happens. So this is still a great need. However, it's our hope that we're going to minimize the number of people that come through clinic this year so that it's only those who need to see the doctor and have to look at another process to ensure that those who really are coming through for vitamins and analgesics still have access to that as well. We're going to be starting a program called The Three Stones. This is a program that is being currently used by Missionary Ventures International in Ghana, and it's based on the concept of cooking over an open fire using the three stones to support the pot. This is a concept the Shawi will be familiar with. They cook on an open fire all the time. And the three stones represent nutrition, hygiene, and clean water. So we have the program, but we need to have it translated into Spanish. We need some help with graphics to make it appropriate for the Shawi, because currently it's designed with the African villages in mind. And lastly, we're looking to do a children's program, which will be similar to a vacation Bible school with that will incorporate stories, perhaps a small craft that's appropriate in the jungle, that's a challenge, and doable in the jungle, and lots of sports activities. I think if you've seen the pictures, particularly in Nuevo Junin last year, where we had 4x4s with a thatched roof, the kids were just crowded around us, and Mitch Rabick was there, and Tavis Sisko, and a couple of the young lads just had a wonderful time with the children, and they just really crave that attention. So we're looking to do something really special for the kids this year. I'm looking at working in two villages, perhaps a third, but that depends on distance and water travel. But we do plan to be in the jungle 8 to 9 days. So we're looking for a variety of people this year. The team will be no longer than 14 for the jungle ministry, smaller if we can do it. The big challenge for the team in Peru is the planning of the boats and supplies when we're out 9 days, clearly food, because we're not just 14 of us there. We have translators, we have cooks, we have boat drivers. There's a lot to think about and logistics. I will be leading the team again this year. I know that comes as a huge surprise to everyone. Eric will be with me as well, and he'll be responsible for everything that goes on outside of the clinic in terms of the camping needs. But I'm looking for at least two nurses and a doctor. I think I already have a pharmacist. We're praying about that. Further to that, I need someone strong in adult ministry that will lead the adult program. And to come alongside that leader, one to two other people. And then a children's ministry leader and two people to serve alongside the children's ministry. If you feel that God has been tugging at your heart for Peru, I know there's many people here that kind of go, I have a heart for Peru, but I'm not medical. If you have a heart for Peru and you think that this God is really touching your heart, I ask you clearly to pray about this. This is not a canoe trip in Algonquin Park. This is a rigorous, it's hard work. It's not necessarily a feel-good ministry. We're not walking down and handing out wheelchairs in the, you know, this is rigorous and demanding. So please prayerfully consider We are looking for team members who are FAT, F-A-T, flexible, adaptable, and tolerant. And that is a must. Please remember, it's a jungle ministry. I'm looking for adults. University age is the minimum. There's a lot of hauling to do, 50-pound bags. You have to be able to pack your own backpack, which can weigh, 30, 40 pounds. And the days of work are very long. So I'm going to be at the back of the church afterwards while we're setting up. I have some handouts of things that you need to prayerfully consider, questions that we'll answer. I'm going to be back there, and I also have an application form. And feel free to approach me on any other Sunday as well. And do you want to, that's it. I'll stop talking. Do you want to, everybody's like, yay, get her off the stage.
No, that's okay. You did a great job. Thanks, Pat. When Pat contacted me and we started talking about the possibility of having Joe come, I sat down with her in her house, and she started talking about farming ministry. And I married into a farming family, and I worked on a pig farm for a few years. And being in Ethiopia last year, we saw firsthand the effects of a sustainable farming ministry in a developing nation, and what it does for the ministry, for employment, for what it does, what it says about an organization to the government, just the many ways that one specific thing. And so that got me kind of excited about this direction. And so I was really excited to be introduced finally this morning to Joe and hear a little bit about him and his background. So would you welcome Joe as he comes? And if he's done his due diligence, when he opens up his computer, his fiance's picture will not be on there. But we'll see what happens.
My computer is being very slow. It's very good to be this far north. Although a few days ago when I arrived in Pennsylvania, I was not looking forward to coming any further north. And the odd thing was, last night as we were driving up, the further north we came, the warmer it got. So maybe after this, I'll head up even further. I don't know yet. The ministry that we have in Peru started about 8 years ago. And I've come on in the last about 2.5 years. And a little bit of my background is I grew up in Panama. My parents were self-supporting missionaries, meaning they dairy farmed there as livelihood and did mission work part-time. So they were not receiving support from other organizations. And so I grew up in that environment, in a third world country, tropical environment, dairy farming, and also doing mission work. So when I had the opportunity to go to Peru, it seemed like most people would believe that I was, I had the ultimate resume for the job. But as God is good, teaching humility, I've hit the wall several times. But thankfully, in the last... Okay. Thankfully, we're at the point now where we think we have a good plan of action. So, I'm getting ahead of myself now because I'm just trying to wait until this gets started. So I'll share a little more about the stuff that, later on, the stuff that we think we're pretty sure is going to work now. Prior to me coming on board, they'd been working with cacao, which is chocolate bean, which will be an export product, meaning that they are selling a product and are going to be able to bring money in to their communities from outside instead of, money just moving around within their community. And that's a way, that's what economies need to do in order to grow. There has been a decent amount of success with the cacao projects. People have learned to do their crops technify. Well, never fails me to do this.
Yeah,
It is froze. The lesson God is teaching me on this trip is to always have a backup plan. Last night, I got lost on the way here and did not have backup directions either. All right, hopefully it's doing something now. So I'll just start without the pictures. So a really brief overview of the area that we are working in Peru. It's in the Amazon basin. Most people, when they think of Peru, think of the coastline or the mountain range. And I'm going to run through this fast because I know that this church has been involved in the area for years. So just a quick overview in case nobody has heard about it before. So usually, normally, people think about the coast and the mountain range, which has had some ancient civilizations there and have developed technologies and ways of dealing with the elements of the area they live in. The jungle, however, is a completely different story. I'm working with people who 2 to 3 generations ago were hunter-gatherers running around practically naked in the jungle. You know, like the pictures that you'll see of people with their long spears and just a little cloth tied around their waist, painted up faces. That's how they were a couple generations ago. And contrary to what a lot of anthropologists and other people lead you to believe that that's the idealistic, perfect way to live, I've heard stories from other missionaries who have gone much, much deeper into the jungles of Peru and speak of when they've encountered these tribes that still live in this way, the extreme agony that these people live in because they are so oppressed by the spiritual world. So in all their belief system that they have, they live under such oppression. So naturally, when these groups start coming in some contact with civilization, they are hungry for something else. And they start adapting everything of the other civilization that they can, along with the good and the bad. And the other thing that happens when they start coming in contact with other civilizations is that the more civilized people then see advantages and take advantage. And so those are the conditions we're working on. But back to the overview. So we're working in the area of Peru that's about 4,500 kilometers from the Atlantic coast, and the river, that's in a tributary of the Amazon River. So the river flows down towards that area, and the elevation from where we're at is less than 200 meters. So if you think of water flowing 4,500 meters to the coastline, and it only has less than 200 meters to drop, basically we're trying to farm in a big swamp, because water just moves very slowly. The district we're working in is the district of Valsapuerto. It's about 120 communities and about a population of about 40,000. As I said, they were traditionally hunter-gatherers before, but in the last couple generations, they've increased their agricultural production, which has always traditionally been slash and burn. They chop down the rainforest, burn it, and plant a few crops. And there was mainly high starch crops, and then they hunted and gathered for their protein. They fished and hunted, and it's a decent diet. The problem is, in the last several years, as the population has boomed due to various reasons, one of them is improved healthcare, the land has become less and less available. So a family who used to have access to 100, 200 hectares, or you guys talk acres, now that land size is greatly reducing. So it's not feasible for them to chop down rainforest, burn it, use it, and move on the next year, because they can't wait 50, 60 years to come back to the same ground again. And there's aren't very much fish in the river. There isn't very much game to be hunted. So we've seen a lot of cases of very poor nutrition. And then also very low income. So families don't have ways of improving their lives because they don't have the means or the resources to to get a hold of the things that make life easier and to provide better health care and more security for their family. So this is the condition that we've been working in, that I arrived in. And one thing that I would like to talk about first is our philosophy of ministry. How do we go about helping? And that was one thing that I thought I could share with you guys this morning, because it's something that I have thought a lot about over the last couple of years. How do we help people without creating dependency? And how do we help people without creating a sense that we are superior to them and they are inferior, that they are in need of our help? How do we do it in a healthy way of empowering people instead of enabling people? So the first thing that comes to mind is, why should we help? And I have some verses, and hopefully we get them up here soon. But why should we help? For now, you'll have to trust me about it. If you have any serious problems with what I say, I'll get the verses to you once I get the computer up. We see all throughout the Old Testament that God keeps telling the people of Israel, you have abandoned helping the poor. You need to help the poor, help the needy, the widow, the orphan, over and over again. The common belief is that the people of Israel were exiled because they were an idolatrous nation. But there are several places in Scripture where, and Deuteronomy is one of them, where it clearly states that it is because they have abandoned the cause of the orphan and the widow, and so on. And there's also a passage where it says, your sacrifices and your gifts and all this are detestable to me because you have rejected the poor. And then in the New Testament, over and over and over and over again, Jesus mentions the importance of helping the poor, helping the poor, helping the poor. What is even more, Jesus speaks about it more than evangelism. Now, I'm not saying that it is more important than evangelism. Jesus probably spoke about it more because he knew our natural tendency that we would always tend to drift away from that. But it is there over and over and over again. Jesus speaks about helping the poor, helping the poor. So we see clearly in the Bible that it is a very, very important part of the Christian life. So that is the reason why we should help the poor. Some misguided reasons that we tend to do as evangelical Christians is sometimes we use helping the poor as an evangelism tool. And when you help in order to evangelize, you're not doing it out of love. You're doing it out of another interest. And as I said, evangelism is very important. And where is my scriptural backing to say that you cannot help as an evangelism tool? There isn't a scripture that says it, but I would challenge you to find a scripture that says that that's the purpose, because there is none. So my biblical basis is there isn't any biblical basis for helping as an evangelism tool. Rather, every time one or the other is mentioned, they are mentioned separately, and they're never connected in the Bible. So as Christians, I believe we are supposed to evangelize all the time and help the needy all the time. In whatever context we are, wherever we are, we need to help those around us and be evangelizing those around us. Another reason people say we should help the poor is to have a good testimony. Well, there are verses that say don't let the right hand know what the left hand is doing. So that is clearly not the proper approach. And there are also people who say we should help the poor in order so that they see that we love them. And so if you do it so they see that you love them, you're not actually doing it out of love. You're doing it to get something. So I thought this is stuff that I've been pondering over in my mind for the last couple years now, and I thought I'd share with you guys this morning. Another thing I've learned in Peru is to be comfortable with silence. One thing I didn't mention in the overview that I was just speaking of was that the area we're working on has no road access. The river winds and winds and winds and winds and winds. And for about 4 months of the year, about half of the rivers are hardly navigable. So transport is a big limitation too. So when we talk about cash crops, that's a big limiting factor is that those products need to be get to market. Yeah, hopefully it opens now. So another thing that we need to think about is what do we define as poverty? People define poverty sometimes as lack of, you know, in our Western mindset, we define poverty as lack of things. That's the working definition of poverty. So some people say it's lack of capital, of material possessions. Other people say that the cause of poverty is the lack of knowledge. And whatever we believe the cause of poverty is, then that influences what we, the solutions that we'll come up with. So, see, when they say it's a lack of things, then the tendency is to give them things, to give them material possessions. Lack of knowledge, well, let's just educate. Lack of God, some people say it's you just need to evangelize. Other people, a couple other reasons that people only think, most people won't actually say them out loud, is it's lack of intelligence or lack of, thank you for being so gracious when I'm trying to get this going. I'm working off of memory here. Okay, it looks like I might as well give up on that one. So you'll just have to do picture stuff in your mind, and if you're interested in Bible verses, hopefully I can get that here later. So I actually close this so it's not bugging me anymore. So how do we define then poverty in a biblical sense? At the fall of man, God created the world perfect and whole. And sin entered the world when man permitted sin to enter the world. And that is when the world became imperfect. So when we don't have the full self that God created, that God intended us to be, is when we are in poverty. Now, this definition of poverty is completely contrary to the world's sense of poverty, or the world's sense of wealth. So, you know, just bear with me that, you know, when we talk about people achieving a good life and wealth, I'm not talking about them having your house and your car and everything else. In a sense, it is not feasible maybe for everyone in the world to be able to achieve that. And then there are things in your life where you are much further from how God intended you to be, and people who have 7 starving children have a much better grasp of that in their lives than what you do. So that's the first thing, is that we can't say in some things, I'm much richer than you. We all have stuff to learn about each other. And so when you look at it in this sense, we are all working from the sense that we are all fallen people living under sin, and we all have a mutual brokenness. And so we all have areas of our life that can be improved. And some of us are fortunate enough to have abilities and resources to help others in different ways to become a more whole person the way God intended them to be. So at the fall of man, there were four relationships that were broken. First of all, it was God with man. That relationship was torn because man blatantly disregarded God's command and went against him in disobedience. So that relationship was torn, and as a result of that, Adam and Eve were kicked out of the garden, and that relationship was visibly broken. The second relationship that was torn was from man to man. Between Adam and Eve, that relationship was torn because all they did was point fingers. There was also a break, the relationship from man to self was also torn. The self-image became distorted of man. There was also a break in the relationship of man to creation. Because man misused creation, then God cursed creation. Got into creation in that way, in man's misuse of creation. So these four components make up what in these circles we call worldview. And worldview is the set of assumptions that we base our decisions on and that we work off of. It's how we view life, how we think life to be. And when you have a distorted worldview, you have beliefs about life that aren't true, and so therefore it leads you to make wrong decisions because you think that things work differently than what they do. Right? So if you have a car that breaks down and you don't understand how that car works, you're going to end up ruining it more than what you fix it. In order to fix that car, you need to know exactly how it works. Or if you're creating something, you need to know how your parts work to put them together to make something. If you don't understand how a system works, you end up just making things worse than what they are. So, in our worldviews, in these broken relationships, when we don't, when we're not understanding properly, then that leads us to in non-biblical worldviews lead us to go apart from God in extreme ways, and that drives the wedge between us and God. In many poor nations or developing countries, that wedge has been drawn with lack of material things. And it becomes very difficult for them to continue following Christ and everything because of their extreme lack of stuff and their distorted views of how nature works because of their the ancestry they have believing in the spiritual world leads them to that poverty. In the Western world, our dominance over nature and our ability to control everything has led us to have a God complex, and we think that we control everything, and we start distancing the spiritual world more and more from ourselves. So in developing countries, they live oppressed by the spiritual world, being that they're still under the influence of spirits, of evil spirits. And in the Western world, we live under the oppression of the material because we have rejected everything spiritual, including those who say, you know, I'm not just talking about people who are blatantly atheists, but most of us who live with the comforts of life, we start to think more and more that we control everything. And so we come to have what we call the God complex. So using that is our philosophy of ministry as we approach working with other people. And I apologize for the laptop not working. As I said, I'll try to pull it up. So if anybody has interest of pictures and stuff, maybe if we can get it going, we'll scroll through some pictures during the lunch, if that's all right. and that. So, but just a brief overview of then the technical side of what we're doing. So in order, as I said, transportation costs is a huge problem. So we're concentrating more on, for cash crops, we're going to continue with the cacao that we were talking about earlier, but there's been a big push by the government now. Now the government is in with a several million dollar budget and doing a much larger project than what we could ever handle. And so, you know, it's a good thing that they're taking that off. So in order to avoid duplicity, we've kind of backed out of that area. But we're still doing extension work and advising the guys because they're already about 3 years ahead of what everyone else who's just now starting to plant. Another good thing is that people that we had trained have gotten jobs, about five of them have gotten jobs with these government projects and has really helped to move the government project forward because they were already from the area, they have their own fields, they already have the experience. So the government was very eager to hire them in that role. But continuing on, I have, at the research and development farm, we've been working with cattle, pigs, and chickens, and we have a working model ready to roll out probably in a few pilot programs in this coming year, and then by 2016 maybe we'll try rolling that out then for more families, probably 20 to 30 families during that year for the chickens and the pigs. As far as cattle goes, it's a much larger project that I'm designing. It would be to start families with 10 cows from the start. So instead of doing one or two and then you spend up more time dealing with them than what it's worth, you know, get them going with 10 right away. So then it's worth their time to take care of them. And within 8 years, those 10, it would be 10 females and one bull. Within 8 years, those that on very conservative estimates, they would be at about 50 to 60 head. And so then they would return about 15 females. And then depending how much help they received to install pasture, fencing, and other facilities, they would return a certain amount of steers at that time too. And that's a very exciting project because at that point, if we would level them off, even at 50 head, at 50 cows, they would be making about 50,000 soles a year, which is about $20,000, which is way, way far and beyond. It's like six times their current yearly salary. One of the challenges is if this is successful is how do you roll out that out without and when people start having progress without creating two classes of citizens within those communities, two classes of people within those communities. So that's going to be a challenge. And then we're also working on crops to feed those animals. And I'll cut it there because if I start describing stuff, I'm just going to get technical and probably about 92% of you aren't going to care anything about what I say. So I'm going to spare you that pain. But as I said, if you have any questions, any interest at all, I'm going to be here for the lunch. Maybe we can get those pictures going. And so any questions at all, I'm open. So I'll hand it back over. And I apologize again for technical difficulties.
So I'll invite our worship team up as we close, and I'll close in prayer, and we'll sing, and then set up without any words after that. But thanks so much, Joe. Be sure to talk to him, and we'll see what we can do to get things going. Great project, and some of what he shared about Soha Abukir invited me to read a book called When Helping Hurts a few years ago, and I've given that to the missions team. We've been going through that and reading that and a few people on staff, and really talks about the sustainability both in our community as we look at outreach and all the different things we do, and the difference between something that is a rescue, something that's a relief, and something that's a development. And what Joe's talking about very much is development, long-term not just a hand up or a hand out, but something that will transform not just one family, right, but a whole community. And we really want to stand behind that as a church. That is absolutely what we believe in our missions philosophy and what we want to promote and build relationships with organizations who are getting this change in missions work rather than just going, as you say, and doing one thing or evangelizing.